authors, writers, dreamers, all. Each day is an invitation to accept the call. I'm Brooke Warner from She Writes.
And I'm Grant Faulkner from NaNoWriMo. You're listening to Right Minded, weekly inspiration for writers. Hello, everyone, and welcome wordslingers, fantasists, epic poets, short story writers, elves, hobbits, and Klingons to another episode of Right Minded. I hope we have at least a few Klingons listening. I'm here today with my very writerly co-host, Brooke Warner of She Writes. Hey, Brooke.
Hey, Grant.
Well, Brooke, I am excited about today's show because we're talking with Mitali Perkins, an author who has crossed many geographical borders in her life, and she's also an inspiring person to me because of the creative borders she's crossed. And so, Brooke, I'm curious, are there any important borders you've crossed that have been galvanizing to you as a creator?
Oh, gosh, yes. But mine are less geographical. I'm a native Californian, and I've pretty much spent my life here. So they're more in the form of tackling things outside of my very familiar and comfortable book world, like doing this podcast or my TEDx talk, for instance. I think we cross borders in a lot of ways, you know, even as readers, that occurs to me, because a way that I do cross geographical borders is through reading. I used to be a world traveler, and then I had a son, and he's now 7, and I have barely traveled internationally since. And so I love to visit places through reading, and not just visit places, but also visit cultures and perspectives. And so I do read a lot of stories by writers from different places, states, regions, countries, cultures. So that certainly occurs to me as well. Yeah. So how about you, Grant?
Yeah. You know, I think in terms of crossing creative borders, I have a very obvious one, which is the year I did NaNoWriMo. And, you know, it's still, I still think about this a lot because the reason I did that was to shake up my creative process. I felt like I was stuck in a creative rut and I needed to do something different. And NaNoWriMo was a big, new, revolutionary thing for me because I was one of those perfectionists who couldn't move on in a novel until I'd perfected that first chapter. And what this means is I have a lot of novels that only have a first chapter. So NaNoWriMo helped me put words on the page and reach the end and also do ambitious things and be part of a community and track my progress and hold myself accountable. And I can do like 10 podcasts on NaNoWriMo, but I'll stop there for now. But I think of new creative processes, I think they're like travel. One of the best things you can do for yourself as a person and as a creator is to be in situations that make you a little bit uncomfortable, like that first year of NaNoWriMo did for me. And travel or trying a new creative process does that by definition. So I think our routines put blinders on us, so we're less likely to get a big new idea. But when we travel, we're able to see something new in the old because we have that perspective and distance. And since we're talking with Mitali Perkins today, I've been thinking a lot about place and how, you know, Mitali lived in so many countries as a child that she was constantly transitioning. But I'm actually the opposite of Mitali. I grew up in a single small town in Iowa, and I spent my first 22 years in Iowa. But then I've spent the kind of second half of my life in California. And what I find interesting is how living far away makes me more drawn to thinking about the Midwest and writing about the Midwest. You know, on the one hand, it's my home, but on another hand, it's this exotic and unfamiliar place to me because I've been gone for a long time. And I remember Ernest Hemingway said that he wrote best about a place when he was far away from it. So, for example, he wrote a lot of his stories about growing up in the Midwest when he was living in Paris. And so I think distance and travel can give us perspective, and crossing those borders fuels creativity.
Right. I agree with that so much. And I think this is why personal narratives are so popular among older writers, people who are contemplating their lives and wanting to make sense of the lives that they've lived. And I teach a 6-month memoir class, and we get a lot of writers in their 60s, 70s, and even 80s. And I really love this because I get to read about these upbringings of people who lived through the Great Depression or who survived harrowing circumstances in other countries to emigrate here to the States. And then they started new lives and they thrived. And then you're reading about an immigration experience or who lived through the 60s, you know, whatever ages they might have been in the 60s, which is a time that I didn't experience because I was born in the 70s. And so all of that is just this incredible archive of lived history. And I think it is why I'm so drawn to memoir. And certainly people do that through fiction as well. I don't want to discount that because I think people are certainly bringing their personal experiences to the fiction that they're writing. So it's just one of my great honors. And granted, it's funny, as you were talking, I was thinking that would be actually kind of cool to pull out your first chapters of all those unwritten books and compile them into some messy book.
Yeah, or just a collection of first chapters. Who wants to read that? Probably nobody.
It's a great one. But, you know, these kinds of stuff, maybe not your first chapters, but these personal narratives and crossing borders conversation, it's moving. And it gets me in the mood for one of your pep talks, Grant. What have you got for us today?
Yeah, I am fixated on travel and creativity. And that's because, like I was speaking about earlier a bit, is that, you know, I think travel trains your mind to be open-minded, to notice things and to notice differences. And when we travel and experience the way people in other cultures behave, we're more likely to see life through varied lenses. So I think traveling helps us be more sensitive to ambiguity, more able to realize that the world can be interpreted in varied ways that are equally valid. And, you know, on this note, I've always wanted to be one of those writers who would decide to say, I'm going to write a novel that takes place in Paris, so I must get on a plane and fly to Paris and live there for a while to write that novel. But unfortunately, my life in terms of time and money doesn't really allow that, and I know that travel isn't available or is readily available to a lot of people. So I think, or I encourage people to find ways to travel without getting on a plane or in a vehicle, and to find ways to travel at home in order to nourish that creative mindset. And here's what I do to help myself do this, is that each year when I'm making New Year's resolutions, I still make New Year's resolutions despite all past failures, I try to think of three new experiences that I can have in my community. And they shouldn't be elaborate. They shouldn't take a lot of time. They shouldn't take a lot of money. So I want to make them very doable. So in my book, Pep Talks for Writers, I mentioned that one year I decided to take salsa lessons, go to a flotation tank, which is this crazy, like, immersive experience where you're just floating in water in the darkness for an hour, and then to walk the length of San Pablo Avenue, which is a big, big thoroughfare in the East Bay that goes on for miles and miles and miles. And so I did all those things in a year, and I found that those, you know, were creatively stimulating. So I want to challenge our listeners to think of just one new experience you can easily have that's nearby your home and doesn't cost a lot, and then to think about how that new experience sparks new thoughts and new types of creativity.
Was one of the challenges that you gave yourself to dress up in a night suit to post on Facebook?
Well, that just happens naturally in the course of working at NaNoWriMo. That's just an everyday thing.
Everybody does need to check out your Facebook page, though, and go see that picture. And I like that it's contrasted against this very stern image of you in the window of your house.
Yeah, and everyone should dress up in a night suit. And I'm curious, Brooke, do nights play any role in your green light moment today?
Good transition. Unfortunately, no. But we are talking about children's books. And as you know, there are lots of incredible mythical creatures who show up in children's books. Today, I'm highlighting Yuri Morales, and she's written a number of children's books. Her story inspired me because I think it's really fundamental to the experience of the public library. And I'm also a huge fan of the public library. I grew up going to the public library, and then, like a lot of people, just stopped going as an adult. But now that I have a young son, I'm over there all the time. And Yuri was at Book Expo this year, and I was inspired to go check out more about her story online. And so I found this on her Wikipedia page. She came here from Mexico with her infant son. She spoke no English and arrived at the Bay Area with no friends, no job. And then when she discovered the public library, it was, like for so many people, a total revelation. And she was so amazed and inspired by the section of children's books because she had a young son who was obviously growing and she didn't speak English. And so she learned English by reading to her son. And then she realized that even when there weren't words, when there were words that she didn't know, she could use the illustrations to figure it out. And I love this story. And Morales felt so inspired by the vivid colors and illustrations that she dared to wonder if she could do books like that herself. And she was already an artist, and she did. And so now she's written all these books, perhaps most notably is Viva Frida, which received a couple of awards. And I just love stories like this because they show the power of daring to believe that you have it in you to go for it. And in this case, we have another author who's crossed borders, both geographical and creative, just like today's guest, Metallie Perkins.
That's great. I love the story and your phrase, showing the power of daring to believe you have it in you to go for it no matter what. That's what we're trying to convey here. So we'll take a little break and then we'll be back with Mitali Perkins. Hey everyone, I'm pleased to introduce my friend and overall whirlwind of inspiration, Mitali Perkins. The other day I clicked over to Mitali's website and I saw in her bio that she posted, "Who in the world is Mitali Perkins?" And the answer to that is that she's been trying to figure it out herself because she spent most of her life crossing borders. She was born in Calcutta, India, and by the time she was 11, she'd lived in Ghana, Cameroon, London, New York, and Mexico before settling in California just in time for middle school. Whew, that's a lot of traveling, a lot of moving. Her biggest lifeline during those early years were books, which led her to be a writer, of course. And she's now published 10 novels for young readers, including You Bring the Distant Near, nominated for the National Book Award, Rickshaw Girl, which was chosen by the New York Public Library as one of the top 100 books for children in the past 100 years, and Bamboo People, an American Library Association's top 10 novels for young adults. And I'm also proud to say that Mitali is on our NaNoWriMo Writers Board. So welcome, Mitali.
Thank you. It's so good to be here. Every time someone reads my bio, I feel exhausted.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even mention the other 7 books. So,
oh gosh,
you can.
It's more
you can
the traveling than the books. Yeah.
Well, here you are with us in the Bay Area.
Yes, I am.
And the theme of our show today is crossing borders, and you've not only crossed geographical borders. I know you've also crossed creative borders. And I mention this because I remember when we had coffee a few years ago, we had a great talk about NaNoWriMo, and it just happened to be October. And you told me on the spot that you were going to sign up for NaNoWriMo just for the heck of it, just to have fun and to be playful with your writing and to nourish a different side of yourself as a writer. Can you tell me about that experience?
Yes. I have been writing under deadline for some years now, and so I wanted just to play. I wanted to get back in that fun word-crafting season. I think when you're starting out, there's a lot of playfulness with your writing, but once you're a little more established and this is my full-time gig, so you're trying to make a living on it. The deadlines come and then you feel that pressure and it feels like final exam week every week. So NaNoWriMo gave me the opportunity just to have some joy and fun and enjoy the wordplay, which I love.
That's great. I think it's true. Unfortunately, the more that one writes, sometimes you lose that playfulness that drew you in the first place. And so I always try to remind myself what I was like when I first started writing, how there was no publishing or no salary to earn from writing. Am I right in saying that year during NaNoWriMo, you at least got the idea for You Bring the Distant Near?
Yes, that was the year where I was thinking about that novel and I was writing pieces of it. The book is has several characters, and so I wrote some of the chapters of some of the characters in that season. I didn't quite make the word count I was reaching for, but I sure got a lot of momentum, so it was good.
And Mitali, You Bring the Distant Near spans continents, decades, generations. How did you decide on this structure and how was it influenced by your own life crossing geographical and cultural borders?
Yes. Yeah, so we came when I was first came to the States when I was 7 years old. And so it really is a love story about America and one family, because I think it takes several generations to realize the impact of immigration. And so my parents came when they were in their midlife. In fact, they were younger than I am now, so I'm astounded they made such a big move at that stage. But for us, our generation, we were the code switchers. We were the ones that learned both this culture and our home culture and were able to go back and forth. And so I wanted to cover all three generations and see how that big move of citizenship from one country to another affects a family over time. So the book is really moments in a family's life over several generations. And the moments show how the family's changing.
You know, Mitali, when we first met, I was impressed by how mission-driven you were as a person and an author. We don't hear this, or a lot of writers don't speak about that mission that's really driving them. So I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about your mission as an author, Why do you write? And then I also know that you're an active teacher and speaker as well.
Yes. In fact, I just gave a keynote about this. And I usually, when I speak to writers, I try to be very practical and think about how I can give them suggestions to enhance their own career. But this last keynote, I was much more personal than I usually am. And I talked about my writing as a career and as a vocation, in the old sense of the word, a vocation, a calling. And I talked about how important it is to keep your hands on both of those reins to drive your writing. With career, I mean all the professional nuts and bolts, being really excellent in the craft and in presenting yourself as a writer and the profession. But when it comes to vocation, I also really recommend that you keep a hold on that, because that's what's going to fuel your career. The career is hard. The professional side of it is tough. You're going to get rejections. You're going to get bad reviews. You guys know how difficult it is. So if you don't have that sense of calling, that sense of mission, it's going to be hard for you to keep standing through the rough punches that you take in the career. So my vocation, I discerned it very early on, before I really hit all the rejections. My first book was accepted right away and published. My second book was rejected 22 times, and it took 12 years between book one and book two. And that's when I kept asking, is this right? Is this what I'm supposed to do with my life? Is this the contribution I'm supposed to make to the planet? Because those were some tough years. The doors kept closing. And I kept going back to that question, is this my calling to how I'm supposed to serve? By writing books for young readers, it seemed there was so much poverty and hunger, and I'd done all this grad school training and public policy, and I thought, are you sure you want me to sit in front of my computer and just type up stories? It seems a little bit removed. But again and again, I kept hearing affirmation about that calling. And so that's really what has sustained me over all the years.
That's great. That's really inspiring, especially when it comes to getting through those rejections that can be, they can feel like they're closing doors. I'm curious, can you characterize or describe like your mission, like what you want to contribute to the world through your writing?
Yes, I think stories widen the hearts and minds, especially of young readers. And so I want to write stories that will widen hearts and minds of young readers and enable them to travel in the world in somebody else's skin for a while. I guess that would be my goal. I often wonder, I often imagine, you know, these troublesome people in our headlines. I often picture going back to when they were about 8, 9, 10, 11 and think, what if they had been read to? What if people had read them lots and lots of wonderful stories? I know they would be fundamentally different. I knew how stories changed my heart and my mind. So I think that would be my vocational goal, is to widen children's hearts and minds and allow them to imagine life in another skin.
I'm struck, Mitali, by what a jarring experience that must have been to have that 12-year gap. Most people don't experience that kind of immediate success and acceptance and then that long break. And so thank you for sharing the experience with our listeners, because I think it helps people to continue on during the hard times. Another border you cross is being an author who writes for kids. I mean, an adult who writes for kids, like you were saying, wanting to pursue that particular path. How do you think about conceiving of and writing stories that kids will relate to and enjoy?
I've heard a lot of people have enjoyed my books who aren't kids, but generally I think that hero's journey of coming of age is so important. And I know when I was newly arrived in California in seventh grade as an 11-year-old, and I was the only person of color in my whole school, I held my head high and I had my feet on the ground. And I knew who I was because of the stories I had read before that point. I knew how all those heroes' journeys had equipped me to pass through that very difficult challenge I had in middle school. And looking back, I think, wow, was I ever strong? But I really think it's because of the stories I read. I was very well equipped to do that. And so I think for children, that's where I am, really, is that wonderful coming of age where we claim our identities, we figure out who we are. That is really where I'm sort of stuck. My voice is about 14, 15, maybe at the most. Yeah, then I don't know. Adults are kind of overrated.
I agree. Speaking about myself.
Yes, me too.
Need to be more playful. Mitali, I loved what you said about your mission and how a big part of your sort of service to the world through your writing is to help people travel in another skin, which is always one of the the biggest benefits of reading and writing when I really think about it. But I was thinking about this, and I think sometimes publishers set up their own borders, you know, in terms of assigning labels or book descriptions that categorize books by racial or ethnic content. And I was curious, how do you feel about the publishing marketplace and how its marketing or categories help or hinder reader engagement?
Right. The realities of the market in capital. And I understand it's a for-profit business. They have to sell books. So I completely get that. What I love about today's publishing world versus the one in which I started many years ago is I have social media. Now, Grant, you know I love social media, and part of the reason is I get to showcase my voice. I'm very playful on social media. I don't use any emojis or abbreviations or any of that. I just use words, and I try to showcase all of me so that I don't get pigeonholed. Oh, Mitali, she's one of those, you know, that might be good for Asian History Month, you know, her, one of her books. I try to showcase my humor, my wider voice, so that people can come to me from many different readers. Types of readers can come and find me. So I think that's been a big benefit of social media, is that aspect of it. And our ability to reach our own, to generate our own fan base. There's that thousand fan theory. I don't know if you've probably heard that. With
musicians.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think it's allowed us to be more connected to our readers, which I think then book after book, they'll stay tuned.
Why don't you expand on the 1,000 fan theory for our listeners who don't know about it?
Okay. Well, the theory is that you can make a living. I'm not saying in the Bay Area, but maybe in rural Iowa somewhere. You can make a living as a musician if you have 1,000 fans who will download your next album or song even. If you have people around you who are so eager about your art that they will always buy the next piece of art that you produce. And that's true, I think, for writers as well. I'm not, 1,000 is kind of a random number, but if you have a circle of people around you who know you, know your, let's say the B word, know your brand, but are, and are really eager to read your stories, then you can sustain a career, even though it's not a blockbuster bestseller. I make a living at my writing, which I feel so blessed. I actually make a living doing what I do. And I think that's because, you know, I'm still standing.
Congratulations. It's really great. It is. It's amazing. And I think what you're talking about, whether it's 1,000 or whatever number that needs to be to sustain you, it is about true fans and staying true to yourself. So it's a great message. Thank you, Mitali.
Most of mine are teachers and librarians, and that's a really great group of fans because, you know, they get a whole bunch of new eighth graders or fourth graders every year. And my book keeps steadily selling, which is very nice.
That's great, Mitali. I love also how you use social media to actually break down these categories that other people have put around books. You're saying that by reaching people with your authentic true self online, you're sort of, I don't know, at least I took it as that you were diminishing those borders and opening
them
up.
Yes, I think that's true. It's more, they're more porous than they used to be when the publishers had all the control to define our brands. Right now, I mean, I'm a deep person of deep faith. Faith is very important to me. That might not be something you would guess, even from reading some of my books. But those are audiences that might respond to my books that would not naturally come to that multicultural sort of label. So there's lots of places to cross and join and make relationships and speak into different communities.
Do you have another book in motion?
I do. I'm close to getting to the copy editing stage for my next novel. I haven't talked about it with anyone. You guys are the first ones. So it's called Boy Wonder and Cat Girl. It's about two teens, one from Boston, one from Oakland, who are invited to travel to Kolkata, India, for a summer to learn about human trafficking. And it's interesting. It's kind of a mix of, I don't know if you saw the movie Lion. Did you see that movie about the adoptee that goes back?
I haven't, but it's on my Netflix list.
Okay, anyway, it's about adoption, and it's kind of a serious movie. And then The Marigold Hotel, sort of that Bollywood fun. So there's humor in it. There's romance. It's kind of Bollywood meets, you know, some sort of a heavier topic, because I'm looking at international adoption and trafficking, which are both pretty heavy, but I'm trying to make it accessible and fun. Like, my voice tends to be more humorous than you might imagine with these heavy topics.
Well, you make it happen. I can't wait to read that book. That sounds like many things in one novel. So
yes, I hope. I'm hopeful. I'm waiting for my editor to come back with round three of line edits, and then hopefully we're going to be on the spring 2019 list for Farrar, Straus & Giroux. So let's hope.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Mitali. You always inspire me.
Thanks for your time today, Mitali. Good luck.
Thanks, Brooke. Great to talk to you both.
Hey everyone, for today's writing action, I'm thinking that Mitali mentioned how part of her mission as a writer is to help readers travel through others' skin, and I think it's equally important that we as writers get out of our own writing skin and inhabit others. And so that's the theme of today's writing action, and I think this can mean many things, but I'm going to give you three possibilities to think about. So if you write mainly in one genre, which I do, try another genre. For example, I haven't read a romance novel in several years, to my detriment, I'm sure. So I'm going to challenge myself to read a romance novel and write a short story or a scene that has characteristics of a romance novel. I think this is going to help me because every story at least has some romance in it. So I'm looking forward to this. Another way to cross borders is through point of view. And I think of this, I don't know if this applies, how many writers this applies to, but for years I wrote every single fiction, every piece of fiction I wrote it in the third person. And I really struggled with writing stories in the first person. And I think that's because writing in the first person somehow made me feel too vulnerable on the page. So after a while, though, I was like, I have to write something in the first person. And I practiced writing in the first person and realized just how that simple change in perspective can really open up the way a story can be told and lead to different, more interesting places. Likewise, the third way to do this that I'm going to recommend is just to take a look at who your characters are in your stories. For instance, when I was a young writer, most of my stories formed themselves around a male protagonist. Imagine that. To the point that I was actually got kind of embarrassed that I was I don't know, so limited. So I challenged myself to write from a female protagonist's point of view and do this frequently now and try to find ways to inhabit other people's skin and look at the world through their eyes. I think this is one of the biggest benefits of writing. Both it nourishes me as a person and helps me see the world differently. So crossing borders or getting out of your writing skin is kind of a type of cross-training. You can learn from different approaches to broaden yourself as a writer and a person and add new tools to your writer's toolkit.
Thanks for that, Grant. And everybody, thanks for joining us today. Remember that Right Minded is a weekly podcast. We invite you to download it, to share it, find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please leave us reviews. Like it. It helps us spread the word. So thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.